ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. And it's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope everybody's safe. A little bit of a storm overnight.
Yeah.
Did it wake you up?
If you have kids, dogs, and in our case, both, you didn't sleep a lot last night because there was a whole hell of a lot going on. And our big dog happens to sit by the bed panting like someone that's about to stab you with a knife when there's rain.
I thought that was you. I thought they called you that in the household. You're the big dog.
Well, no. Lisa, and then, of course, Lisa wakes me up and goes, do you hear, Boomer? How can you not? Well, what are we going to do? And then right after that, one kid, then the other kid, then our bed is completely full, and I'm going, oh, I'm not sleeping.
I usually don't wake up during storms, but I didn't remember that I woke up like in the middle of the night. But when I woke up, I was like, oh, yeah, there was a huge storm yesterday. I thought that I had dreamt it. I thought it was part of my dream, but it was real life.
It was coming down, too.
Yeah, there was some pretty bad damage up in the Katy area.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully everybody's safe. If not, then, we feel bad for you. Astros lost a baseball game yesterday. Your reactions to I hate the Manfred rule. I'm just going to start there. Every single extra inning game that has ever played for the Astros in the rest of history, as long as there's the Manfred man, and I don't think it's going anywhere, I'm always going to start the next show by saying I hate the Manfred man. I'd rather a game ended a tie than the stupid Manfred man. Hate the Manfred man.
I'm not a fan of it either. I get that, you know, they were hyper-focused a couple years ago on speeding up the game and speeding up the process and all those things, saving arms, preventing the 18-inning marathons that happened every so often. But, man, I mean, it's not sudden death, but, boy, it's close to it. If you don't, I mean, you sit there last night, and of course, people are like, sacrifice him over right away and you know, work on manufacturing the run. But it completely changes the game after the ninth inning, and it's a tough situation to be in.
Are you a bunt guy there?
I think depending on where you are in the lineup, that's where the decision is made with me. If I'm sitting there with the top four coming up, then probably not. But other than the top four coming up or guys that I know, you know, I'm going to make sure that, you know, with one out, I've got a guy at third base, and I'm at least going to probably live to see another day as opposed to, you know, live and die if you don't get him in.
If I'm the visiting team, I don't like playing for bunt. Now, where you're at in the order matters. If you have Martin Maldonado coming to the plate, right. Yeah, move the runner over. I'm generally speaking, more times than not, anti-bunt, Manfred man, if you're the visiting team. Like, why are you playing for one run when you know the other team's going to have a runner at second base with nobody out? I'm not playing for one run in that spot. So I don't have any issue with deciding not to bunt. Now, Chaz McCormick, maybe hit the ball the other way. Maybe hit the ball the other way. Try to move the runner over. Maybe it's a ground ball. Maybe it's just a deep fly ball. But pulling the ball in that spot's not something I really like.
No, I think that's the art of being a major league hitter, too. You're right. I mean, if you're not going to bunt, then, you know, try and get one that is, whether it's a bleeder, a liner, or you can, you know, or like you said, a sacrifice fly or ground out the right way. Try to at least orchestrate that runner to third base, even if you're not full out giving yourself up with a sacrifice. You know, hit it hard, but unfortunately hit it at somebody. And as soon as it happened, I'm like, well, there's a good chance now that they're going to be out of this inning without a run.
Yeah. What'd you think of Javier's start?
I was good. I mean, I wasn't great, but I was good with the fact that we were approaching the fifth inning and he was still scoreless and his pitch count was down. And then that one inning just, you know, everything reared its ugly head again. You walk the first two guys, you got Bregman with one error and another, you know, and the dropped foul ball. Everything just fell apart all at once and it left you scratching your head. Like, at a certain point, I understand it's the disappearing fastball and all these things, but there has to be some kind of a way of getting a happy medium where you live and die with a guy that it's going to put the barrel on the ball, but the law of averages said it's still in your favor. But the erratic walking of guys that set up that inning was very frustrating.
Yeah, that inning was frustrating. I thought overall he was fine. Strikeout to innings pitched is down again, like from his second start, 4 Ks and 5 1/3. But he was getting some like weak contact on pop-ups. He is a fly ball pitcher. I found it interesting that the Astros used Yordan in left, Dubon in center, and Chaz in right field on a day where you have a fly ball pitcher on the mound. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but maybe because you scratched Fromber and threw that whole thing like awry. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that. But if they go with like a lower defensive outfield whenever you have a fly ball pitcher on the mound, that's something I'm paying attention to. You shouldn't be doing that. Like, that's not a day to play Jordan in left. It's not a day for Dubon. I like Dubon. He's not as good a defensive center fielder as Myers. And then Tucker's a better defender than Chaz McCormick, although Chaz is good, but Chaz is better in left than he is in right field. So weird to me that they went with that outfield configuration with the fly ball pitcher. So it's like, okay, like, these are little things that I'm watching with Espada. These are the little things. Like, is this something that continues? Because that's going to annoy me. If that's your outfield configuration, whenever a fly ball pitcher's on the mound, is Espada really doing the best thing for the team? So because Fromber was scratched, I'm willing to, like, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt here. But it is something that I'm watching. A lot of people wanted Josh Hader for a second inning. Where do you stand on that?
I mean, the first question I had was, is he cool with it? Because, you know, in the past, he hasn't been. I mean, now they've rewarded him, and he's got this massive contract. I would hope the conversation's already been discussed, because your options were obviously very thin no matter what because of how taxed your bullpen was the night before. If he could give you another one, that would have been very big, I think, to then figure it out from there. I was hoping he was coming out for another game, for another inning. He didn't. And at the minute that the guy that I've never heard of before came out onto the mound, I thought, well, this one's over.
Yeah, as soon as you didn't score in the top, I was like, this game's curtains. I would not have used Hader for a second inning. Like, this was game, was it 12 of the year? I'm not using Josh Hader for a second inning in game 12 of the year. I know all these people are pounding the table. You got to have urgency. You got to have urgency. Not really. Like, you really don't. It's 162 games. Like, it's all going to play out. Water's going to find its level. You don't need this urgency in game 12 of the year where you're using your $55 million closer for multiple innings. I disagree with that logic. Like, this is a marathon. It is not a sprint. If it was the playoffs, if it's an elimination game, yes, let's have that conversation. In game 12 of the season, no.
No, I totally agree with that. But the logic for me was, give me another major league pitcher. Give me another guy that gives me a chance to get to the next inning.
Yeah, that's just the state of their roster, though.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, it's extremely thin right now, and obviously you're going to see that again with a starter tonight.
Yeah, we'll get to the Spencer Arrighetti. Mm-hmm. We have to come up with a song for Spencer Arrighetti a little bit later. If you have to pinch hit for your first baseman with your backup catcher, which that's not really a position of great offense, a backup catcher, as we all know very well in the city of Houston. If you have to pinch hit for your first baseman in the 10th inning for your backup catcher, who's what, a career 235, 240 hitter, that guy probably shouldn't be your everyday first baseman. That drove me crazy yesterday. Like, we already know that Abreu stinks and is washed and he's not very good. But the fact... And it's probably the right move from Espada. Like, Caratini probably gives you a better chance than Abreu in that spot. But it goes to show you where this roster is. You pointed to, like, the middle relief, and injuries are a part of that. But the other huge wart on this roster is that Joe Espada is going to use left-handed hitters. He can't trust Jose Abreu, so he's going to his backup catcher. He used John Singleton earlier to pinch hit for Mauricio Dubon. Joe Espada wants to play the lefty-righty game. That is very obvious right now. I don't think he should have pinch hit for Dubon, because I think Dubon's got a better chance to get on base than John Singleton does, regardless of the lefty-righty thing. But Joe Espada is showing that he wants to use a lefty against a righty, a righty against a lefty. And Dana Brown has given him nothing on the bench. If Singleton and Caratini are backup, pinch hits guys late in the game because you're trying to get a lefty bat out there, you have failed him with your roster.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that there is fair criticism to be pointed at Dana Brown right now in several different directions. But you're right. I mean, you look at your options there. I'm totally with you. I didn't think and did not agree with at all. Not letting Dubon hit there. I have totally lost all confidence and faith in John Singleton, no matter what. And if you have to DFA him and that means you lose him, so what? Because at this point, I don't sit there and I'm going to, you know, hang on a thread for the future going, but he might figure it out in AAA again, and then he might. No, that ship has sailed. I'm totally done with him. And the first base situation, again, I was tweeting it this weekend because, Caratini has played some first base in the past, but Caratini gives you a better chance, no matter what his career average is, than a guy that's going up there looking overmatched as a Major League Baseball hitter right now in Jose Abreu. I don't care what he's done in the past. I don't care what his resume says. The only reason why this dude is still on this roster is because that massive contract is looming over everybody's head, and that's a problem.
Yeah. If you're like, it's a sunk cost. So like, you're not doing what's in the best interest of winning. I'm not of the opinion that you should bring up Lo Perfido right now. I'm not on that train because he still has things to work on. Mm-hmm. Defensively, I think he'd be fine, but he still strikes out at a very high rate against AAA pitching. Like that stuff's got to improve before I'm like, yeah, call up Joey Lo Perfido. Sign Brandon Belt, man. Like if you're really worried about winning, sign Brandon Belt. How much is it going to cost you? I don't know what Belt's asking for. $7-8 million. Well, we don't want to play the second tier. Okay, then you don't want to win. Like, you don't want to win because Brandon Belt's not only a better option than John Singleton, he would be a great left-handed bat off the bench that gives you a professional at-bat, kind of like Michael Brantley used to do, but he's also an upgrade over your everyday first baseman in Jose Abreu. And if you want to play the platoon game, cool. Brandon Belt's a lefty. Start him against righties. Use Jose Abreu against lefties. Don't love that idea, but it's better than what they're doing now. I agree with you that Caratini's a better, you know, offensive option than Jose Abreu. But if Caratini's your best offensive option at first base, your team's in deep trouble.
You are, and there's no doubt about it, because that is the fine line that you're dealing with an owner and a general manager that knows that it's not always every time completely 100% about winning, because they know that that contract is sitting there. They don't want to reach the boiling point yet of being able to say, I'm walking away, this is it, and I'm drawing the line and cutting the rope. That's it. So because they're in that dilemma, they're not going to be 100% focused on doing what this team needs right now, which is a steady bat at first base and a steady bat off the bench that can be used whenever your manager may choose to use them, because the options that Joe Espada had are slim and none. And, you know, you're with the lineup you put out there last night, your massive Swiss Army knife utility guy that hits the ball pretty well was already in the lineup. It didn't leave you any very good options anyway. But it's got to be sooner rather than later that you start really focusing on a hard decision that has to be made about, you know, several guys, but one guy in particular, and that's the guy that's sitting there collecting a whole bunch of money to hit less than 200.
Yeah. 7612, why not put Dubon in first? I bet he could play the position. I think he is a better option, but again, it's the same thing with Caratini. If Mauricio Dubon, who is a punch and Judy guy who doesn't walk and doesn't slug, is your everyday first baseman, you're in trouble. Like Mauricio Dubon, yes, he's better than Jose Abreu. Yes, he would be a better option, but Mauricio Dubon's offensive numbers as an everyday first baseman don't play. Like, it's not good enough. You got to get offense from that position. Like, it's the one position in all of baseball, like first base, DH, but sometimes teams use DHs as just like a way to give guys days off. Maybe corner outfield, like left field, like first base, left field, DH, you should have plus bats in that spot. Is Dubon a better bat than Abreu? Yes. Is he a plus offensive player compared to the rest of baseball? No, he's not. So like the Astros have a huge hole at first base where you should be getting offense. That's a position that you get offense.
Would you put third base in there?
Oh, third base a little bit less because it's become a bit more of a defensive premium position.
Yeah,
you see a lot of really good
defensive
traditionally,
players. Traditionally, third base was another guy where you would have...
I think it's kind of changed a bit.
It was...
I would have it like fourth or fifth.
Either for average or for pop, but one or the other, third base normally brought you something of that too. Because I agree, look, I think the other thing when we talk about limiting Espada, the fact that you can use Dubon in so many different places, but you can't if that's a guy you're trying to rely on as being your stopgap or help me now, please guy, because now he can't do a lot of different things from a versatility standpoint in the middle of a game, because his guy to do that has to cover the ass of the guy that's got a full pocket full of money and doing nothing with the bat he's got in his hand.
Yeah, he's, I mean...
And he ain't better with his glove either.
They're so far below just like what the offensive average is at that position. One good sign from yesterday's game, I thought Javier was fine. Like, he was okay. But then the bullpen was very, very good again. Like, your big three gave you what your big three was supposed to do. Some people, I'll use Hader for the second inning. I'm not there. Your big three went three innings, did not give up a run. They gave up one hit, walked a couple, but whatever. Never a serious threat. Presley a little bit, had the runner in scoring position. And then Rafael Montero was fantastic. First and third, one out, comes out and gets you out of the jam completely. So Rafael Montero, was it the fifth straight outing that he's not given up a run? And he also stranded the inherited runners in a tough spot. Runner at third base, less than two outs. The bullpen yesterday was really, really good.
Yeah, you had just brought it up, too, about the fact that this year he had been really, you know, doing his job and limiting any runs from scoring. And then he comes in last night. And I'm not going to lie, when Espada walked out there, because you knew there was already one visit in the inning, I was like, oh, wow, I might have left Javier trying to fight his way out of this as opposed to going to Montero. Then, tip of the cap to Montero, he comes in and does exactly what you needed him to do. So he was big last night.
What is your headline from yesterday's game? 713-780-ESPN. A busy Monday show. Will Doctor, who just cashed a 65-1 outright winner at the Valero in San Antonio, he's going to be joining us at 3:45 for all of your Masters bets. We all pretend like we know a ton about golf this week when we really know nothing. So we're going to bring in somebody that does and is going to win you some money. Brian makes faces today. Why is he making faces? You mentioned when do you DFA Jose Abreu. We'll get to that conversation as well. But the single person on the Astros yesterday that single-handedly lost the game in his own regard. I'll tell you who that was when we come back. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Brian had to do a lot of work with the camera to make sure I look okay. Also on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Just find us there. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A lot of work for Brian to make me look okay. You never have to do that with Pro Dunk Hoops. They're always okay. They're the best basketball goals on the planet. Way better than anything you can find at the big box stores. If you're going to get a basketball goal, and you should, whether you like to play, whether you have kids that want to work on their game, if you're going to do it right. Get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Don't be one of these houses that has a busted backboard, the rim's jacked up, it's not level. Sometimes it's just laying flat on its belly. Get a goal from Pro Dunk because they make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. A tempered glass backboard, not this little plexiglass, whatever they call it. No, tempered glass backboard gives you a true, authentic feel. A breakaway rim, more on that later. Stainless steel hardware, and it's rustproof. You have to have rustproof in Houston. Well, they do. Height adjustable, we mentioned that breakaway rim. You're going to need that because you can throw down some dunks. That's right. Lower the goals all the way down to 5 feet, raise it to 10 feet, anywhere in between. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Makes it simple. Their lightning adjust feature, it's easy to do and it's fun to do anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Also, their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. You work, kids are at school, we get it. You can only play at night. We'll get LED light kits so you can play at night. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, and lots, lots more to customize your goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. And you can order everything, including professional installation. Yes, the pros of Pro Dunk will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do the work for you. Give them a call now at 281-351-9822 and visit produnk.com. That's produnk.com.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
1565, it'll be okay. Abreu just starts as slow as a snail in syrup, then he picks it up like a snail on cement. here's the real issue for the game yesterday, specifically. Like, Abreu used the bigger picture issue. But the guy who lost you the game yesterday is one Alex Bregman. I had a buddy tell me that he's playing like Roger Dorn. Like he's not playing like a guy that's chasing a bag. He's playing like a guy who's gotten the bag. Maybe he's making tons of money on this Wild Soul Salsa, which I hope is better than Breggy Bomb, because Breggy Bomb is trash. It's about as bad as his play here to start. But Bregman's a notorious slow starter. We get that. But yesterday specifically, let's go through the list of things that Alex Bregman did to cost you that game. Look, it went to extra innings. It was 3-3. You score one run or prevent one run. In regulation, you win. You win. Alex Bregman had four plays specifically where he cost the Houston Astros. Bases loaded, no outs in the first inning. What does he do? A weak pop fly on the infield. Yiner Diaz has to bust it and beat out a double play ball just so you scratch one run in the first inning. So Alex Bregman, bases loaded, one out, or nobody out in the first inning. You pop it up on the infield, weak pop fly, which you got that little fade golf swing going on. Terrible. Other at bat in the fourth inning, first and third with one out. First and third with one out. What does he do? He strikes out. He fails to get the job done, Alex Bregman. You could have tacked on another run there. So his at bat in the first inning cost you. His at bat in the fourth inning cost you. Okay, let's look at the defense. The defense in the fifth inning. You mentioned Javier got off to that in the inning with a walk. Before he walked the leadoff guy, weak little pop-up over towards the camera well, third base side. I understand that Bregman's coming from a long way because you got a lefty up. It's not the shift rules. He's not playing shortstop like somebody on Twitter tried to tell me. He gets to that ball. He starts chopping down before he even gets to the warning track and then alligator arms it. How do you not make that play?
Let me ask you a question. He's right-handed, right? Yes. He has two arms, right?
Yes,
I think. How do you not stick out the other arm like most third basemen do to use it as a guide and also as a way to ease you into the rail, knowing exactly where it was and still be able to make that play? Inexcusable for any third baseman in that play. I don't care contract year or I don't want to get hurt or whatever the hell was going through his mind. And he had to run a little bit. Yes, he still had plenty of room. That one was the one that the minute it happened, I was like, God, I hope that doesn't leave a mark. And then lo and behold, threw the door wide open for the big inning.
The big inning, and then he had the throwing error later in the inning. So like,
now it was a tough play.
Yeah,
kind of catching it on that hop backpedaling, but the fact that, you know what, he still could have made the throw and then threw it completely way, you know, out of the stratosphere.
Yeah, I mean, you make that play. Who knows how the rest of the fifth inning goes? Because that's where they scored their three runs. You were kind of You were responsible for that inning starting the way that it did, and then you're also responsible for that final run scoring. Whenever, hey, just make a solid throw there. You get out of that inning 3-2. Royals didn't score until extra innings. You didn't score until extra innings. Alex Bregman was atrocious in that game yesterday, whether it was with the bat or whether it was with the glove. That bottom of the fifth, Adam Frazier walked to lead off the inning, and he shouldn't have been on. Shouldn't have been on. Bregman should have made that catch. Hunter Renfroe hit a ground ball to the left side. You got first and second. Sacrifice bunt, which Christian Javier was thinking about going to third there. What are you doing? Get the out. It's a three-run game. And then you had a sacrifice fly to left field. Like, they probably, and then the Bobby Witt two-out triple. That was nice. And then the error. You probably get out of that inning without a single run scored if Alex Bregman makes the catch, which I think, and it sounds like you think, was a routine play for a big league third baseman.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. It was frustrating to watch at the time. He's played third base, you know, long enough, and he is really, really good as a defensive third baseman. It's inexcusable to me that a guy is doing like Jake Meyer's things after he had, you know, deer in the headlights syndrome from injuries and running into walls and things like that. There was no reason to believe that he should have any kind of CTE going towards a railing. And it's not screaming at you either. You've got the chance to, you know, to stick your arm out, guide your way in, still keep your eye on the baseball, and make that play. At the time, you say, it's early in the game, and it's not going to bite you. Guess what? It did, and it cost you basically the game.
I mean, it's not early in the game. It's more than halfway through this bottom of the fifth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like close to when Javier is going to be done. So, in my opinion, Alex Bregman's going into business for himself.
There's no doubt.
The offense has been atrocious. 222, 589 OPS. The runners in scoring position. Like, he's been a hitter in the past that, like, thrives in that cleanup spot. Like, he's been good historically in the cleanup spot. He is not this year. He's been awful. And then you're making plays like that yesterday where you're pulling up before you get to the side fencing because you're probably thinking that you're in a contract year. He's going into business for himself.
He's already been in business for himself, Jeremy. When we found out in the offseason that he gained 23 pounds, that was all about him. That wasn't about the team and what's in the best interest of what this team needs for this season. This is all about how do I get that bag, and the biggest way to do that is hit the biggest bombs I can hit and start really looking for power numbers to go way up. Don't worry about anything else. Don't worry about how that might negatively affect the team. This is all about me. And that decision last night, the foul ball in particular, was absolutely awful. But when you watch the way he has hit all season long to this point with runners in scoring position or in key moments, he's not the same Alex Bregman. He's trying to do things that I don't know that he can still do, but he's trying to do it for selfish reasons, and there's no way of looking the other way on that.
Yeah, because if I'm looking for the best interest of the Astros, I don't want Alex Bregman trying to hit 40 home runs because I don't think he's capable of doing that. Yep. He's a 20 home run guy, 20, 25 home run guy, hit the ball on the line. And sometimes your line drives are going to go over the fence.
Yep.
Like, you're not a power hitter. You're not. And I understand he's chasing the money. And I think that was an example of that yesterday. Like, hey, you mentioned that, you know, you can get paid getting all these home runs and hitting all of these bombs and all of that stuff. You also got to stay healthy. And I think Alex Bregman running over to that camera well, he started to chop down before he was 3 feet shy of the warning track. I can't really sprain my ankle here because if I lose 20 games to a sprained ankle, what's that going to do for my free agency? Bregman going into business for himself, and he literally single-handedly cost the Astros the game yesterday on four different plays. Bases loaded, no out in the first and third, one out in the fourth. The little catch on Adam Frazier in foul territory, which you got to make, and then the throwing error in the fifth. Sick of that from Alex Bregman. Someone tweeting at us, Adam, could Diaz play first and Caratini catch most days? What do you think about that, Blinkers?
We talked about this yesterday a little bit. Look, I'm fine with it either way. If it's easier, you mentioned that it would be easier on Yiner's knees and that, you know, you could save him more by letting him play first base. I'm fine either way. You've got a guy that right now is your only viable option, I think, to put at first base if you're not going to put Abreu there, because I can't see Singleton being there for another game. It's just I've already seen enough. And if you believe that, hey, look, Caratini in a short period of time seems like he's got a pretty good rapport with these pitchers. It seems like he's being effective with these pitchers. He's capable of catching. If you want him to catch and put Yiner at first base, I'm fine. The bigger thing to me is I think there's more games under the belt at first base for a guy like Caratini to where maybe he would give you a better defensive option at first base with scoops and everything that comes with it.
Sure, but I think he gives you a better defensive option at catcher. I do think he's better at both positions defensively. I agree with you. But where would you rather play the guy who's better defensively and the guy who's better offensively? Give me the defense behind the dish and give me the offense at first base.
Yep.
So I would be okay with that. You got to make that decision. I'm not a fan of calling Lo Perfetto up. I think Lo Perfetto would put up better numbers than Abreu. Spend a little bit of money. And I hate spending other people's money. And James Click is not cheap. The best option at first base right now is Brandon Belt. He's a better option than any scenario we just drew up. Every single one.
I think that Lo Perfetto would give you better power numbers. Yeah, I don't know that he would give you, but I mean, you can't do much worse, right?
Maybe. We don't know. Like, how's that going to translate to the bigs whenever you can't make contact?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind power numbers are definitely in his favor. If he can hit for any kind of average or just put the bat on the baseball when he's not hitting for power, mm-hmm. that's a huge upgrade over what we've seen so far from anybody playing first base with the two guys that have been the main culprits.
The back of the baseball card for Brandon Belt's not bad. The back of Brandon Belt's baseball card is not bad, and that's how rosters – he's like 36.
That's not bad.
35, 32, 2-3 years younger than Abreu.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's something else that I get back like backlash on. What do you mean, Belt? He's old. He's 2-3 years younger than Jose Abreu. You found the fountain of youth if you bring in Brandon Belt instead of Jose Abreu.
You're not
Abreu.
Paying him 19 a year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's out there. Maybe his demands are high. I don't know. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So the more I think on the Fromber stuff, I think there's two positive signs. Like, if we're trying to be optimistic, glass half full, there's two positive signs. Now, if you're pessimistic, glass half empty, I think there are two negative signs. I'll discuss next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about my good friends at MyBookie, because MyBookie is the one place I always tell you to go if you want to put some money down on a game to make it more interesting. And they're constantly doing things to give you more options and make everything more entertaining and possibly create more winners for you when you're looking to put money on games. I always tell you MyBookie.ag is your one-stop shop for people that take care of their customers. They do it better than most anybody I've ever seen. They're always doing extra bonuses, and I always tell you to remember our promo code BET975, which gets you a lot of those bonuses. But right now I'm going to tell you also about their website, because their website kind of takes your viewing experience to the next level. Real-time live betting that lets you stream and bet the games that you are watching right from the MyBookie.ag website. You can watch the games. You can get into the real live in-game betting that you're always following as the game goes once you put your initial bets down. And it takes everything up a notch. And they also give you more, like up-to-the-minute odds, prop bets, and this week's expert predictions that might help you decide who you want to put your money on. Again, always remember the promo code BET975, but get to MyBookie.ag right now. And if you do, and you're new to the site, they're going to give you a welcome bonus on your first deposit, all the way up to $1,000. For example, you put $200 in, they got $300 ready to play in your account instantly because you use our promo code BET975. The fun never stops, and even when there's no games being played, you can still get in for live casino games with live dealers standing by. You want to play some blackjack, you want to play some poker, they got you covered too. All that I tell you to do is all because I believe in them. They've been in business for over 10 years. They're not going anywhere. Neither is your money. You can bet on anything, anytime, anywhere from the only place I tell you to do it. MyBookie.ag. Use that promo code BET975.
You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I think there's two ways you can look at the Fromber Valdez situation, which I don't know what's going on. It's a mystery. I saw the Paulo Houston guys talking about the injury. It's the top of the elbow. The top of the elbow is quality content there. What is the top of the elbow? Like, have you ever had top of the elbow pain? Only time I have top of the elbow pain is if I bang my elbow on the table.
I've never had top of the elbow pain. When I was pitching, and a lot of it was the torque on the curveballs and things, I always got the inner elbow, like, yeah, right in the inner part of the joint.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously the if you feel anything in your shoulder, your rotator cuff area. But yeah, I've never, the top of the elbow is a bit perplexing.
That I think it's good. I think it's good. Maybe, like yeah. It, instead of having the inner elbow, I think he was playing too much pickleball. That's my guess, because like that's tennis elbow. You build up the arthritis there, which arthritis for a pitcher is not good. All right, you want the positive or the negative first?
Glass half full.
Okay.
Still positive.
All right, there are two things that I think you can look at the Fromber situation from positive news. The first one is they're acting like it's super minor. Like they're acting like it's a super minor thing. They mentioned missing a start or two, and I think they both did. They both mentioned this. Joe Espada mentioned it with the media yesterday, and then Dana Brown, before he was talking about the back of a baseball card, he told the flagship that they only expect him to miss a couple of starts. So, okay, that's two different people that are saying that. And I think that only a moron would raise the expectations like that and then it not be somewhat true. So for the fact that two different people, Espada and Dana Brown, well, we only expect them to miss a couple starts. We think that it's minor. It's not something that's serious. If they thought it was serious, I don't think these are the words that are coming from their mouths.
No, I would tend to agree with you. I mean, look, as much as a lot of times you want to play the media before the media gets a chance to play you, and so, you know, you play your cards close to the vest, you speak in generalities, you do a lot of that stuff, you don't go that far to kind of put it out there with the chance it could bite you in the butt. Because, look, we saw up close and personal the kind of back and forth when it was a little bit more intense with Chandler Rome and the Verlander and all that stuff. But just from what, you know, most guys do when they handle the media, they're probably going to say a whole lot less if there's a chance it could be serious. Because you don't want to be caught with your pants down and suddenly it's like, because now the media is pissed off that you kind of misled them.
It's not even the media. I don't care about the media. I don't care about the media. It's the fans. You can't oversell and then underdeliver like that.
But I'm just saying, the media, because they kind of represent the fans and what they're trying to do, they're in complete tack mode now. Then they're going right to, well, what the heck was a starter to? What did you not know? How did we get to this point? I would agree with you that I don't think that it's smart business if you go out there and really kind of go out of your way to downplay what could be major.
I'll go a step further. I think it's common sense. Like, it's not something you do. If it's like you have concern that this is going to be, like, even like a six-month injury, like if it's Tommy John, if you have the slightest thought that it could be that, you don't even think it's going to be that, but you have the slightest thought that you think that it could be, you don't sell that he's only going to miss a couple of starts. That's stupid. That's moronic. That's common sense to me. And maybe one guy would do that. I don't think both guys would do that.
I think specifically the part that you mentioned there that sells me on the idea of this being at least plausible is putting a timeline on it. By saying a couple of games, they're voluntarily putting a timeline on it. Because as Joel said, there's 1,000 ways they could have talked, you know, in a vague general sense to say that, oh, it's not that bad, it's not that serious, we don't think he's going to be out long. Yeah. There's tons of ways they could have said if they were disguising something very vaguely without putting a timeline on it. By putting a timeline on it, you invite a whole different set of problems if Fromber doesn't hit that timeline.
And two guys did that.
Right,
two guys.
Exactly. And think about that, because I can see how, like, they have their morning meeting or whatever if Dana's on the road and they talk about, you know, what kind of angles they're going to take, what they should say and shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. But you would even say, and I go back again to the, I think it was the Verlander-Chandler-Rome back and forth, and when they were Verlander, they were in, it was, we're hopeful.
Yeah.
We're hopeful. Now you've already left the door open for if something goes wrong or you get more information that, hey, we said we were hopeful of him coming back. In the meantime, we got this, so that.
Very vague, very gray. Yes. This is more defined. Dana Brown, the flagship, said he's going to be fine and will miss a couple starts. It's what he said. Like, okay, that's coming on top of what Espada said yesterday when he talked to the media, saying that he spoke with Fromber late Monday night and that Valdez, quote, said that he felt better. Then Espada said Valdez will not throw for a day or two at least. So here's another timeline. He's not going to throw for a couple of days. He also said then once the inflammation goes down, we can get him throwing again, and then we can assess how quickly we can get him back throwing and get him built up. So they're talking about him throwing in the next few days. So, like, but that's the positive spin, I think. Those are the positive
But can I also
reasons.
On that, Jeremy, say that you can say you think it feels better, but he's not throwing, right? So there's one thing to say, I feel stiffness, pain, whatever, just walking the hallways of the hotel or wherever, whatever my daily functions.
Mm-hmm.
But you really don't know what you need to know until he picks up a baseball again.
Sure, but they know the imaging. They know the imaging. So if they're like, hey, you're good throwing in a couple of days, you know that everything's intact.
Right, but I'm just saying from the standpoint of, I've had times before where just, you know, picking up a coffee mug and writing something, my left arm felt fine. But the minute I picked up a baseball again, I felt what I felt the last time, and that's when you throw up the red flag.
Yeah. But I think the timeline is something that you can throw in as a positive. Here are the two negatives. One of them we talked about yesterday. One we talked about indirectly. Espada being told that he wasn't told about the ligament. He reiterated that the soreness was on the top part of Valdez's elbow and forearm, not the inner elbow. So that's kind of bizarre to me.
Doesn't that say that you know what's going on with, I mean, if it's not specifically the ligament, you know exactly pinpoint what he's dealing with.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it sounds like he bumped his elbow, but that's not, he reported it after throwing. So it's like, that's what makes this thing mysterious. And also, I mean, I'm calling BS on Espada. Like, you're telling me that he went to see team doctors in Houston, they don't have an idea about the ligament, and then Espada was not given, you know, news about the ligament? Hey, Espada, it's okay. It's intact. Hey, Espada, it's torn, and he can't ever pitch for the rest of the year, which isn't really what they're telling us through the quotes that they're giving. The second negative, go
the
ahead.
Funny thing to me is, no matter who you have as a head coach, that is pertinent information you have to have. I go back to the McHale Daryl Morey relationship, where Daryl was hyper every minute of every situation. I need every answer I can possibly get. And McHale was kind of like, let me know what I'm dealing with. But in a situation like this, 10 times out of 10, McHale is not letting Daryl Morey away from his office or practice starting or anything else until he knows what's the latest on Harden. What's the latest on, because if I don't know that, then how am I going about my day?
Yeah, I think that's why I'm calling BS on that. The second negative, if you want to take a negative spin out of this, they called up Spencer Arrighetti. Like, this isn't a spot start, and I think it makes some logical sense here. Like, the pitching's upside down, everybody's taxed, they've thrown a lot. Bringing up Spencer Arrighetti today, he's going to make a normal start. I think he's had 5 days. He pitched last Thursday, so however many days of rest that is, he's pitching on the sixth day, so that's 5 days of rest, just off the top of my head. I think that's right. Let me count real quick. And it bumps everybody else back, so everybody else is going to be a little less taxed. Hunter Brown bumped the day. J.P. France bumped the day. Ronel Blanco bumped the day. So they're going to have that extra day rest, which can only help in terms of them going deep into the game. But I didn't feel like they would call up Spencer Arrighetti for one start. So the fact that he's the one that gets the call here is somewhat surprising. And I think that if you want to reach a little bit, you can take that as a negative sign, because why are you bringing him up if this is something that's super short term?
Yeah, I think this is more a case of you expected to get more than one out in the first inning from the guy you did bring up. And because your bullpen got taxed, you used the rest of your bullpen last night, that this could still be that I need a legit starting pitcher right now just to save all the arms that I got going. And I also think, because your starters, from Blanco to a bad start from Hunter Brown, probably all could use that extra day, you bring him in. And if it is going to be multiple starts, now you've got him and he's capable of giving you a couple of extra starts. So I'm not going to be as concerned about that, because their idea the first time was a disaster.
I wonder, too, that if now they've, you know, they pulled the Band-Aid on Spencer Arrighetti being up with the bigs and he pitches well, I wonder if he's someone that if he, like, earns the spot on the roster, if they think that if everything's okay with Fromber, you get Verlander back, you know, all this stuff is good, knock on wood, I wonder if they transition him to the bullpen.
Well, either him or somebody else, right? I mean, it depends.
Well, I can't imagine that Arrighetti would have the priority there.
No, but you know Dana's pretty high on him.
I mean, sure, Dana was talking to him all along. I mean, think about it, though. Think about the process. Who are you bumping? France? You're bumping Blanco?
I think it would be I don't think you can bump Blanco at this point. I think it would be him, France, or maybe, you know, at some point down the road, or Keedy. But yeah, if we're going short term, then maybe regardless of him being a starter in Sugarland, if he gets guys out, he's better than a lot of guys that haven't been able to do that in the middle of the bullpen, and maybe that is an option.
See, I'm of the thought that if you have a guy that you're high on and he's ready and he pitches well, you leave him up on the bigs. And if that means that he moves to a relief role where he's getting two innings at a time as opposed to starting, okay. Like, he makes the big team better. He's ready for the bigs. Just leave him here as opposed to getting starts in Sugarland where, you know, what do you do? It's just an emergency in case you have other injuries?
Yeah, I just think that if you can get big league hitters out, you have to find a place for them, because quite obviously when you looked at the bullpen so far this year, there's some guys on that roster that have been on the roster since the start of the season that can't, that don't look like you, and you shouldn't have any confidence in them the next time you see them take the bump for your favorite team, to where at this point, maybe there is a little more concern. I won't say desperation, but I think that there's a little bit more focus on, we're not exactly cakewalking through the first little part of our schedule either, and we've got to make sure that we don't set ourselves up for problems later on by extending our pitchers early in the season, trying to cover up from the woes of guys that can't get guys out.
Yeah, like, do you want Spencer Arrighetti taking Wander Suero's job and pitching, yes. you know, an inning here and there?
Yes, I do.
Or do you want him starting games in Sugarland? Like, I understand that it's not great for his starting pitching development, but it helps the big league team. And it's not to say that he can never go back to being a starter again in his career.
It's not a death knell for his development as a starting pitcher. Obviously, Javier, that was basically his life for the first couple seasons he was in the big leagues. I don't really, overall, this negative on Fromber, I don't really take it as all that much of a negative or a red flag. Just because from some of what you guys said, and I agree with it, you got so many guys that have been pushed that maybe might be on quasi-pitch counts this year with Hunter Brown and Ronel Blanco and J.P. France, guys you're not going to want to push them. You know, you're not even want to really get them to, what, 106 innings? I don't even know if you want to get them to 150. So I see the value in at least maybe bumping a day here and there, giving the extra day of rest, maybe limiting their amount of starts over the course of the year by doing that. And if Fromber's out for, you know, 2-3 turns through the rotation, then Arrighetti takes those 2-3 turns.
713-780-ESPN. Let's get to our guy, Will Doctor. Last week, he hit on a 65-1 outright winner in San Antonio. What are the master bets that you need to know before they tee off in Augusta tomorrow? Will Doctor next with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Just put you in a good mood. Just brings a smile to your face. Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Being joined now by Will Doctor. You know Will from the host of the Charlie Epps Golf Hour here on ESPN 97.5. He also does a golf preview from a betting perspective each and every week. Straight out of Vegas, pregame.com. You follow him on Twitter at DrMedia59. I listen to this almost every week. I haven't listened to the last 4 weeks because I've been traveling. And boy, am I sad I didn't listen last week, Will. You handed out a 65-1 winner. What did you see in Akshay Bhatia that you thought he was going to win and eventually did win in the playoff?
Well, Joel and Jeremy, thanks for starting me off with a little bit of Dave Loggins' Augusta theme song to get it rolling. Listen, Akshay Bhatia, he had a great week. 2 weeks ago in Houston, he finished 11th there, and I got to watch him live. I caught a little bit of his action. And, you know, he's just an incredibly impressive talent at 22 years old. He's already been a pro for 5 years. He skipped college and went right to the big leagues. And, you know, he played just fantastic at the Valero Texas Open last week. It was a 65-1 ticket. My best bet was for him to top 10 at plus 550, but it didn't come without drama. I don't know if you tuned into the action on Sunday in San Antonio, but Denny McCarthy made quite the charge there at the Oaks course at TPC San Antonio. You know, fired a 63, made 8 birdies on the back nine, and really had me on the edge of my seat sweating. But luckily, he faltered in a playoff, and Akshay Bhatia punched his first ticket to Augusta National.
He almost punched his way out of the tournament, Will. He shouldn't celebrate that excessively until he wins the damn thing, not just gets into the playoff. When he threw his shoulder out and needed a timeout, that was had to be a little bit frightening as well.
Yeah, if there's any sport where an athlete is going to get hurt fist pumping, I guess it's got to be golf, right?
Yeah, but you look at it and you're like, okay, you already threw it on the green from there. Can't you just finish the hole before you need your trainer and some of that QT tape?
I completely agree. When he, you know, he hit 2 great shots in that first playoff hole. The drive was great. The layup was great. And then he was calling for a trainer. He almost walked off the golf course.
Yeah.
And then I think as soon as he saw McCarthy lay the sod over that 100 yards approach shot into the water, I think he came back and just decided to finish up. But yeah, it didn't come without a sweat. It was a great lead up into Augusta. And I'm ready to roll for the 88th Masters.
Well, we're interested, too. And, of course, the first thing that everybody's going to ask you, we know Tiger's got the streak going, but Tiger ain't the Tiger of old. What are you feeling about Eldrick Tiger Woods as he makes it to a place where if there's one tournament he still has the mental to win, it's definitely at Augusta?
Yeah, absolutely, Joel. And he's chasing just a little bit of history this week. Tiger's made 23 straight cuts at Augusta. He's tied with Gary Player and Freddie Couples is the longest active streak of made cuts. I think he will do that this year. I think he'll make the cut. His leg is in a much better place than last year. Of course, there's some weather coming into Augusta tomorrow. A little bit of rain, 30-mile-per-hour winds, but it is up to 78 degrees there this afternoon. There's some humidity in the air, and that's all Tiger can ask for when it comes to that leg. I am a little concerned about the amount of rounds for Tiger going into this year's Masters. He only played the Genesis. He missed the cut there. He didn't play the Players. But from the words we got from Freddie Couples, Will Zalatoris, who played a practice round with him this week, Tiger is playing Augusta the way he always has. There's no one better with the long irons. There's no one better around the greens, and that's why he thrives at this place. I think because his health is in a better place than last year, I like Tiger to make the cut this week, but finish probably near the bottom of the leaderboard once Sunday closes.
Will Doctor joining us on the HRNP guest line, host of the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, straight out of Vegas, podcast 2, pregame.com. In my mind, the best golf handicapper there is. Like I said, I listen to it each and almost every week. Sad I missed it the last couple of weeks. I listened to the first half of the Masters preview today, Will, and I heard you talk a little bit about what skill sets you're looking for with these golfers this week. You heard Tiger talk about how the folks at Augusta have the course right where they want it. You mentioned that it's going to be a little bit wet there tomorrow. When you're looking at these golfers and who to place bets on, maybe you're looking at a DFS lineup or two, what skill sets are you looking for in these guys?
Yeah, so the course all week before this rain came in, Augusta has been preparing this place for it to be the firmest it's ever been. Xander Schauffele, he said during his practice rounds, he was hitting long irons into greens, and they were one-hopping and tomahawking off the back of the green. So it's playing incredibly firm. Now, what people can't get fooled on is what this rain is going to bring. It might be damp tomorrow afternoon and in the morning on Friday, but Joel and Jeremy, as you probably know, Augusta has air dryers under every green. They have state-of-the-art, facilities that keep the course dry. I think even after the rain, it's still going to play firm through the weekend, and that's why we need players that can hoist the ball way up in the air, hit the moon shots, and get it to land soft into the small landing areas. I think I narrowed it down to this list of players. I really was specifically looking at this week Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Wyndham Clark, Hideki Matsuyama, Tony Finau, Cam Young, Ludvig Åberg, and Seth Gala. And those are all players who are fantastic at sending iron shots way into the clouds, getting it to land soft. And I think you got to pass on some of the players that approach the game with lower ball flights. Brian Harman, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Joaquin Niemann. You got to have a player with power and someone who can hoist the ball way up in the air.
So I've got to ask the question because it's going to be an interesting field when you start bringing some of the LIV golfers back into the setting of Augusta and more of a PGA Tour type feel. And you're looking at guys, Mickelson knows the course really well, but you got Koepka who's played well there before, DJ, guys like that, Rahm. How's that? Do you see anything? Any kind of trends with the LIV golfers playing this week at Augusta?
Yeah, of course. We've seen from guys like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, Joel, the more relaxed schedule, not playing as often leading into the majors, it actually works to the advantage of Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. They don't like to play a whole lot. They like to get revved up for the majors, and that's it. We don't know that that's the case for John Rahm. John Rahm swept the California swing and had, 17 some rounds under his belt leading into Augusta. This year he's only played five tournaments. Overall, a pass on John Rahm on the LIV front. I think Brooks Koepka is just a fantastic winning option after finishing runner up last year. I think he's 22-1 in the books right now. This is his son's crew. This is going to be his first year at the Masters with Dad. I think Koepka's in a great spot. And, of course, Patrick Reed and Bryson DeChambeau are really playing well going into this year's Masters. Bryson with his brand and how he's become an influencer. He gets revved up for Augusta. This is a big stage for him. And Patrick Reed, is looking to take it to everyone on the PGA Tour and at Augusta and the Ryder Cup captains. He gets fired up for this one as well. So as far as the LIV guys, I like Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, I can relate to that influencer thing with Bryson DeChambeau. Will Doctor joining us on the HRNP guest line. It doesn't seem like you're too crazy about the favorites at the top. Did I read that right?
Yeah, you are. I am not crazy on Scheffler. You know, he's got a baby due here. You know, he's saying, you know, maybe in the next 10 days, if his wife goes into labor midway through the tournament, he says he is leaving. Joel, Jeremy, I'm sure you remember the 99 U.S. Open. Phil carried a pager around with him trying to catch up to Payne Stewart. You know, these kind of things happen. But I don't, and it's not just the labor thing I don't like about Scheffler. You know, watching him in Houston, he missed a couple five-footers down the stretch to win the tournament. Putting has been his nemesis. So between the off-course distractions or blessings, depending on how you look at it, and the putting, I'm out on Scottie Scheffler this week. Rory McIlroy, you know, this is a little bit more... it's a little bit more clear on, you know, why someone would be out on Rory. His iron play this year has been horrible. You look at his numbers inside 200 yards and inside 100 yards. He's outside the top 100 in both categories on the PGA Tour. I understand he's working with Butch Harmon. He had a good prep week at the Valero, finishing 10th. But when you look at the large scope of things for Rory, he has not played well this year.
So before we let you go, Will, sleepers. People under the radar, a guy or two that no one's thinking of, that maybe it's the conditions or maybe it's just something you've seen in terms of a guy playing and putting his game together. Maybe it's not translating to the tournaments.
Yeah, I think, you know, what the odds are telling us, Cam Young to top 10 at plus 400, that's considered a sleeper. And Cam Young is an elite player, you know, and you know, he's only been on the PGA Tour for 2 years and he has three top 10 finishes. In major championships. He has an incredible resume. And basically in the past, what Cam Young has struggled with is the short game. He's picked up shots on the greens in three of his last six events. He has his short game in a really good spot heading into Augusta. So my sleeper for the week would be Cam Young, the top 10 at plus 400.
Will, a big fan of your work. If any of our listeners are looking for a place to get to your Masters plays, this is the week to do it, obviously. But each and every week, Will has a preview from a betting perspective. It's straight out of Vegas, pregame.com. Of course, you host the Charlie Epps Golf Hour right here on ESPN 97.5 as well. Will, great stuff. We appreciate the time, and we'll have you on again next major, probably.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Will Doctor. Find him on Twitter as well, Dr. Media 59. You can figure out where you get the podcast from there, or you just go to Straight Out of Vegas. That's the A.J. Hoffman thing, too. I think that's how Will got his start with the handicapping.
I think that's absolutely right.
And he crushes it. I mean, 65-1 outright winner. Where else are you getting that?
That's
he
solid.
Killed it last year, too. He was up. I can't remember how many units he was up last year. I think it was like 58, 60 units.
Yeah, it's not a flash in the pan type thing. It's amazing how accurate he can be consistently week to week.
Oh, I mean that sincerely. Like some of our guests we have on, we like blow them up and, you know, sensationalize them. Will Doctor, in my opinion, is the best golf handicapper in the business.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good. So check him out, Straight Out of Vegas. Listen to that Masters podcast if you want to get to all of his plays. Check him out there. Can't wait for this week, too. This is the week that we all pretend like we know everything about golf and we literally know nothing. Like, you have a Will on it. Oh, okay. That's what we should know about golf, but we don't. What position could the Texans fix / address in the second round that would have the most positive impact on the team's potential? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.